Religious pilgrims were some of the first mass tourists in history. According to textual scholars, the earliest reference to Hindu pilgrims is in a sacred text written 3,500 years ago, in which the wanderer is praised. Today, Hindus have hundreds of pilgrimage sites. One example is Pushkar Lake in India. It is surrounded by steps leading to the lake where where pilgrims throng in large numbers to take a sacred bath. A dip in the sacred lake is believed to cleanse sins and cure skin diseases. Traditionally, pilgrims who visit the lake stay in tents. However, these days, that does not necessarily mean discomfort. A luxury boutique eco-resort has a deluxe tent with beautifully appointed large four-poster beds in the tents, a luxurious bathroom attached to the tent, and a lovely porch to sit on and enjoy the beautiful landscape grounds. So pilgrimage does not always mean suffering. According to the Buddhist tradition, just before Buddha died, in about 2,400 years ago, Buddha spoke to his chief disciple about the making of his life story into a sacred geography. According to the legend, those who wanted to follow the Buddha's way should visit four places: the place of his birth, the place of his enlightenment, the place where he gave his first sermon, and the place where Buddha died. Today, the traditional place of Buddha's birth is Lumbini in Nepal, and it is a World Heritage Site. In our century, being declared a World Heritage Site is like winning the Olympic gold medal of religious pilgrimage locations. At the site is a tree, twisted and tired with age, with streams of faded prayer flags tied to the branches of the tree. It is like the tree under which Buddha was born 2,500 years ago. The Buddha's mother, it is said, bathed in a pool at the foot of the tree before delivering him and watching him take 7 steps in each direction. There is a pool at the location today. Its waters today are brown and unmoving, and it is located between damp brick steps, which have been built to contain it. The Hajj is the yearly Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca. It is the biggest single annual tourist event of any kind in the world. To control the numbers during the 5-day Hajj, the King of Saudi Arabia limits the visas to 3 million. Rising in the center of Mecca is a cluster of new luxury skyscraper hotels and a shopping mall, which have replaced the historic structures and archaeological sites. Opened in 2012, the Royal Clock Tower Hotel, which has a clock tower that looks amazingly like Big Ben in London, it is the world's third tallest building. Nevertheless, pilgrims describe their trip as a religious reawakening. During the Hajj, to show the equality of all Muslims, everyone wears only white cloth. Pilgrims are prohibited from arguing or even speaking an angry word. One American Muslim wrote, "Elsewhere, except at the best of times, every person is looking out for himself. During the Hajj, People look out for each other. The Hajj is a sacred rite of passage. In that way, it is like an act of love. It offers a climax to the religious life. In the Jewish tradition, over 2,000 years ago, three holy days were set aside for men to make a pilgrimage to the temple in Jerusalem. Today, many Jews, men and women, make an effort to emulate the ancient pilgrimages by visiting the Western Wall, the only remains of the Second Temple of Jerusalem. It is a place of prayer and pilgrimage sacred to the Jewish people. During Passover, Jews make pilgrimages to the homes of friends and family for a ritual meal. Christians follow three great pilgrimage routes: to a cathedral in Spain that is the reputed burial place of Saint James the Great, one of the apostles of Jesus; to Rome to see the Vatican; and to Jerusalem. Each year, thousands make a pilgrimage to spend Palm Sunday and Easter in Jerusalem. They walk the stations of the cross, the actual death walk of Jesus. On both sides of this ancient road where Jesus is purported to have carried his cross to Calvary, the tourists pass merchants selling stuffed toy camels and souvenir Jerusalem bags. Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Jews, Christians. This year, about 1 billion people will cross borders to travel from one place to another on a tourist event. And of those 1 billion, about 200 million will be going on a religious pilgrimage. But what about Unitarian Universalists? In the United States, Unitarian Universalists can visit several wonderful sites. In Boston, I encourage you to visit King's Chapel, which became Unitarian in 1785. In Gloucester, I encourage you to visit the first Universalist church in America. In Concord, Massachusetts, I encourage you to visit the home of the Unitarian Louisa May Alcock and the home across the street of Ralph Waldo Emerson. In the Midwest, I encourage you to visit the Unitarian Universalist Church in Oak Park, Illinois, and the Unitarian Universalist Church in Madison, Wisconsin. They were both designed by the Unitarian architect, Frank Lloyd Wright. But the deeper roots of our Unitarian side of our faith are in Europe. So 18 years ago, in the summer of 1996, I made my first pilgrimage to visit the birthplace of the Unitarian Church. The Cold War had ended in December of 1989, making it much easier to travel to Romania. My visit was a spiritual experience. The dictionaries say the word spirit has a common Latin ancestry with the word breathe. The etymological root invites a comparison between the experience of breathing and the experience of spirituality. We breathe in air. We breathe out the old air, we breathe in again, and spirituality is like that. We don't take a breath once and then have all the oxygen we need and we can stop breathing. We have to keep breathing in again and again. And spirituality is similar to that, that we have an experience that empowers us and refreshes us and renews us. But then we lose that experience and we have to breathe it in again, have a second experience. This is why we need to come to church every week instead of just going once and getting everything you need and never coming back. The spiritual fills our bodies like fresh air. It gives us new energy for living, just as a breath of clean, fresh air fills our lungs. When I visited the Unitarians in Transylvania in 1996, I took in a deep breath of fresh air, a deep renewal of my spirit that was so refreshing. The feeling of renewal has stayed with me, and my memories of that visit still give me energy today. Transylvania is a small land located between Hungary and Romania. Today, it is politically part of Romania. Unitarian churches first developed in Transylvania starting in 1568. Today, an estimated 80,000 Christian Unitarians live in Transylvania. The belief that separated Unitarians from other Christians was their belief that Jesus was a human being and not God. So in the Hungarian Unitarian Catechism, I bet you didn't know Unitarians have a catechism. The Hungarian Unitarian Catechism, it says, "We know that Jesus was a real man from the Gospels, where he first called himself a man and the Son of Man. But his real humanity is verified by his whole life as well. He was born, grew up in body and spirit, was happy, sorrowful, hungry, thirsty, suffered, and died. Jesus was considered to be a man by his disciples and by his contemporaries as well." Now, these churches who profess this belief came to be called Unitarian as opposed to Trinitarian, because the Trinity is based on the belief that Jesus is God. And so we say God is one. We say God is not divided into three parts, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And in every church in Transylvania, those words can be found over the pulpit or over the entrance door. God is one. Starting in 1990, American Unitarian churches have donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to partner churches in Transylvania to help build new churches, to feed seminary students, and to aid retired ministers. Thousands of American Unitarian Universalists have made a pilgrimage to Transylvania. In 1996, after first visiting the capital of Transylvania, Koleshvar, we drove south through the hilly countryside, through green farmland, past many farmers with horse-drawn carts harvesting hay, and through small villages to a village called Dicha St. Martin. The church had been assigned as the partner church, as a partner to the church I was serving in Bethesda, Maryland at that time. Now, there are no hotels, there are no restaurants in most of the villages where Unitarian churches are located. If you want to visit Europe and get away from mass tourism, Transylvania is a good choice. Rick Steves has yet to do a program about Transylvania, although he visited there last summer, so it may be coming. Sunday morning, I spoke in the church in Dieter St. Martin. Now, the building was originally Roman Catholic, built about 1,000 years ago. There's something emotional just about preaching in a church that was 1,000 years old and was Unitarian in faith. A bell rang out at 10, and this is a bell rung by hand, not one of these electric bells we have in America. And then again, it was rung a few minutes before 11. We walked from the parsonage to the church in a procession, myself and the minister. And the church was packed with members of the congregation, full to overflowing. Reverend Fajikash gave me his seat, the seat of the minister in the church. The men sat on my left in the pews below the organ. The women sat on my right. Men and women are separated in worship on Sunday morning in Unitarian congregations in Transylvania. The younger children sit in the center between the men and the women, with the minister looking down directly at them from the pulpit. So they pretty much are on display and have to behave themselves. But when you reach a certain age, when you become a young teenager, you get to sit in the balcony where no one can see you. I spoke, and a translator gave a Hungarian version of my words. Allowing me to enter the center of their religious space, allowing me to be part of their worship, the people welcomed me. They shared their sacred worship with me. All they knew about me was that I said I was a Unitarian minister from America. And I felt that feeling, that warm feeling that comes from being trusted and respected by strangers. I felt gratitude for that trust and humility. After the service, we ate a big meal in the parsonage. We drank palinka, a traditional fruit brandy. We ate and we drank more palinka. Our host supplied us with more food and with coffee. I discovered that if I drank the palinka down, they would immediately refill my glass. And the trick to not having been served too much palinka was to just let the full glass sit there for a long time, maybe taking a little sip. But if you drink it all, it gets filled immediately. And it's a little bit like drinking vodka. As we drank and ate, our hosts smoked and talked and smoked. Since that time, Reverend Fajikash has given up smoking and gained about 30 pounds. For 2 days after that Sunday morning experience, we drove through the countryside of Transylvania. We visited villages, farms, and churches. And many smaller villages were populated entirely by Hungarians. And the Unitarian Church is the heart of the town. The long rides through the countryside heightened the impact of entering the Unitarian churches in these villages. We drove past homes hundreds of years old and through miles of farmland, riding along roads that were sprinkled with potholes. We passed horse-drawn carts and horse-drawn hay wagons. We saw strong but primitive rakes that appeared to be made locally simply out of tree branches. When we entered small Unitarian churches, the beauty inside the church contrasted with the austerity of the farmland through which we had driven. There were colorful paintings covering the ceilings. There was red and white needlepoint cloth hung from pulpits and pews. Hand-carved wood was on the doors. The artwork gave the churches a wonderful feeling of warmth and vitality. The art gave the space a sense of holiness and a feeling of joy. My trip to the birthplace of Unitarianism was for me a religious pilgrimage, a spiritual experience. And the deeper feelings I experienced on that journey are really beyond words. Today is Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week in the Western Christian tradition. Some of our Christian friends are making a pilgrimage to spend Palm Sunday and Easter in Jerusalem. Passover begins Monday evening, April 14th. And some of our Jewish friends are making a pilgrimage to visit their friends and family for a ritual meal. The Jews and the Christians, along with the Hindus, the Buddhists, and the Muslims, have traditions, well-established traditions of religious pilgrimage. And now, so do Unitarians. I have made the pilgrimage to Transylvania 3 times. The last Sunday in May, about a month from now, I will make a 4th visit. This time to our new partner church in the village of Koran. They need to know that they are not alone. That Unitarian Universalists in America, Unitarian Universalists in Sarasota, Florida, care about them. This is especially important now as Russian forces are posed to invade the Ukraine. Our partner church in Koran is only 185 miles south of the Ukraine border. After the visit in May, I will be glad, of course, to return here to Sarasota. After seeing again the roots of Unitarianism, I will feel a renewed commitment, a renewed emotional connection to our religious faith here in this community. My pride in serving in this role as a Unitarian Universalist minister will be renewed. We are part of a faith that is equal to any other in intellectual depth, in spiritual understanding, and courageous leaders. So I hope you feel the same pride as members of this great congregation here in Sarasota.